Det finns få människor som har nått lika mycket som Bruce Dickinson. Han är en meriterad fäktare, författare, pilot, ölbryggare, familjefar, prisbelönt och eftertraktad talare, plus att han överlevt cancer. Och ja, han är också frontman för ett av världens största och mest inflytelserika band, Iron Maiden. Då jag träffar Bruce så sker det i ett hotell i Helsingfors år 2017. Då är han i stan för att snacka om sin bok, sin självbiografi, What Does This Button Do?
What's it like to finally, because usually your interviews that you've been doing for decades now has been about things you have done, like it's been like kind of like products. It has been because of Maiden, because of other things. Now it's like you the person, Bruce yeah. Dickinson. Is that a different situation for you?
Well, it's a little bit different, but in some respects it's a little bit easier. Mm. Because you have a lot more things to talk about, a lot more varied. And you also have things that people perhaps didn't know. So situations that people didn't know about, things that are, you know, obviously a bit more personal. It is an unusual sort of turn. It's actually quite hard to talk about albums because there's not actually that much to say about them, because it's an album. You listen to it. It's music. You like it? Cool. Mm. You don't like it? All right. No problem. You know, so people ask questions like, what's this song about? Well, listen to the song, dude. Right. You know, yeah. So it's always a problem to make talking about music that interesting over the years. Obviously people want to know things about, you know, how it was recorded, where it was recorded, what the process was and things like that. But when you've done 16 albums, the process is not that dissimilar for each one. It's the end result that actually does the talking for you, actually. And so so talking about a book actually is quite a lot easier to talk about.
Okay. Have there been like, when you started to go like, take a trip down memory lane to write down things for the book, yeah. Were there like also, like, did you surprise yourself also? Like, were you surprised yourself? Because there are probably things that you haven't thought about for years. And then you all of a sudden like start to go like through what you experienced and like, oh, it was this. I remember I felt like that, you know, at that point.
Well, I wrote probably 50% of the book in my local pub. Because I'd just take a notepad along and I would get a couple of pints of beer and I'd make them last for 2 or 3 hours. Mm. And I would just write on if it's a quiet evening, you know, and... So a buddy of mine who's also a musician who's there kept walking past. And then when I finished, and I do about usually probably about 1,200, 1,500 words at a time. And once I was done, I was like, okay, right. And he said, you're smiling a lot. I went, what? He said, no. He said, I've been watching you when you're writing. He said, you're chuckling to yourself. You're grinning the whole time. I went, am I? He went, yeah. I went, oh, I must be really enjoying it. And of course, because you're concentrating and you are recalling things. But actually, it was enormous fun writing the stuff down and yeah, kind of reliving some of it. And you have to think carefully about how you deal with certain issues and the way, you know, you have to be careful about, not putting words into other people's mouths that they didn't say necessarily, and people who have opinions and things like that, particularly with respect to, you know, when band members leave or when band members join and things like that. So you've got to be sensitive, but at the same time, you have to respect have to respect the people that you're working with, but also, yeah, you know, stuff did happen. You know, we did have disagreements and things. It's no, you know, it's, but it was to give an indication of how things felt without going on about it, because the book is not about Iron Maiden. The book is about me. Mm. And Iron Maiden is a big part of my life, but it's not all of my life.
Bruce är van att snacka om saker han gjort, eller sen Iron Maiden eller flygplan eller annat. Nu har situationen det att han pratar bara om sig själv, för att han skriver ju också i boken bara om sig själv. Och det stör det egentligen inte alls honom. Det känns egentligen bara naturligt, för att om man frågar om en Maiden-låt så kan man lyssna på låten. Om man har en fråga om öl så kan man smaka på ölen. Han skrev en stor del av boken i sin närpub medan han drack ett par öl åt gången.
Son actually about a year ago, and he told me that I can't remember what we were talking about, but he was saying that every now and then you get together, you two and the rest of the family also. I guess it's this same pub, because they said like it's your like home pub, and there you can just sit by yourselves and had a few pints, even get a bit drunk sometimes, so you get to be all like left alone. It's the same pub I assume that you were talking about.
We play an awful lot of Connect Four.
And there's not like people coming all the time like, hey, like tell me about 1984.
No, I'm not interested in telling people about 1984. You know, it's like, you know, no.
Was there anything that it was especially painful to go through when it comes to what this book, you know, what's on these pages?
Especially painful. Well, I won't say it was painful, but I suppose the bit that I rewrote the most, excuse me, the bit that I rewrote the most was probably the bit, all the stuff to do with childhood. Mm. You know, because I thought, well, you know, is that you know, is that fair? Is that unfair? And things like that with things. You know, and you know, the stuff about boarding school and being bullied and stuff. And I tried to strike the right, well, what I thought was the right balance between sounding like you were feeling sorry for yourself and just stating, hey, look, this is what happened. Mm. And this is, you know, how you feel about it. And this is the end result, you know. Because that is kind of the way I feel about it. So I don't, you know, I don't take things, personally for that long. I just can't be bothered. Mm. You know, I'd much rather get on with what's going on in the future and sit there, you know, living in the past and grumbling about it and rehashing it. But of course, when you do an autobiography, you have to go back to the past and deal with it, you know. Mm-hmm. So some of it was quite funny. I do occasionally get that somebody wrote a review of the book and on Amazon, who was actually at school with me. Mm-hmm. And it was so funny because he was like, oh, well, you know, the book was factually incorrect. And I went, oh, let me say that. You know, he said, I believe that the anthrax, the animal which fell into the river infected with anthrax was not a cow. It was a sheep.
Right.
I went, oh, well, shit, there goes the neighborhood.
When it comes to this things from, I mean, times change, of course, but like when it comes to these things about your childhood and going to school and stuff like that, did you at any point, because you have fans in so many ages, you have fans like that are 6 years old and fans that are 80 years old. Yeah. Did you at all at some point like take in consideration younger people that you know are
no. This is a, you know, this is a book for grown-up children. Mm. You know, so if you know, yeah, and you know, and there's bits in there about, you know, sort of, yeah, minor bits of drug taking every now and again in like early years and things like that. There's nothing major there. And there's odd bits of, you know, misbehavior and things. But really, I mean, 6-year-olds reading it, you know, hey, good luck. If a 6-year-old can read the book, I think it's, you just go, hey, good for you.
Yeah.
6-year-old reading, yeah, go on, you know. Mm. No, it's written for people who actually, you know, are functioning human beings, you know, not little children.
Right.
You know, yeah. I mean, who writes an autobiography that can be read by 5-year-olds?
Yeah. I was perhaps thinking more like younger teens or so.
Yeah, so. But you know, yeah. I mean, younger teens. I mean, yeah, they're gonna read it. You know,
Bruce och hans familj brukar sitta där i samma pub nu och då på söndagar och bli lite fulla och spela. Och de fick vara rätt ostörda faktiskt. Det som man fick mest fundera på angående boken före han skrev det och skriva om det var säkert relaterat till hans barndom. Han ville inte trampa på någon stor heller eller verka som martyr eller något sånt här. Bruce funderar inte desto mer på om barn eller unga läser boken. Om man är ung, om man är liksom jätteung och med våld vill läsa boken så bra bara, då får man då helt enkelt ta det som man läser där i storyn.
Is there anything in the book that your stories that your close ones didn't know before reading the book? Anything that might be new to them?
I don't know.
Like, have you heard any reactions from your close ones? I didn't know this, Bruce.
No. Maybe my kids. I don't know whether my kids have actually read it, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't know whether they could be bothered. You know.
I think it was really sweet when Austin told me when we spoke that he didn't know that. He knew that you were in some big band because, you know, this was when you were not in Iron Maiden. And when you rejoined the band, he was like, oh, this was all the posters and pictures are from, like, this scenery.
Oh,
like,
right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he never told me that. Yeah, you know.
I thought it was really sweet.
Yeah, no, it's... wow, he probably thought I was the world's biggest Iron Maiden fan in the closet, you know.
Yeah, but then he saw, like, one of the first, if not the first show, and it was in front of, like, tens of thousands of people. Like, oh, wow, this is what Dad used to do.
Oh, that's cute. Excellent, yeah. He's a good guy.
You're known for so many things. I mean, you've written stuff. You, of course, the whole thing with Iron Maiden, aviation, everything. I'm wondering, like, what happens, like, your creativity and your ideas. What happens in your head? Like, is there, like, do you, at the same day, like, if you're at this hotel room, for instance, can you get, like, ideas for several different projects during the day? Or are you, like, really focused, like, now I'm going to, you know, focus on music-related things or now, I don't know, fencing-related things? How does it work when it comes to, like, ideas and your creative head?
No, I'm just really lazy. The most interesting thing about my hotel room here is that it has a sauna.
Oh, really?
Right, yeah. So all I did was try and see how much I could sweat. Are you kidding me? Absolutely. Yeah. Last night I was sat there baking, you know, in the thing, you know. I got some books from the Finnish author, the number one selling guy, Tuomo. Is it Tuomi?
Thomas Kyrä, the guy who...
Yeah. And I just read through two or three of those. He wrote me three books and that he left me. I read a few pages of those and thought they were very, very funny. I didn't go around particularly thinking up ideas. I don't think up ideas every single day. You know, you just don't. But ideas just pop into your head. You don't know why. I think you obviously when you're running around doing a lot of traveling, I take some books with me and I just try to bone through a load of books. I read a reasonable amount. Mm. It's a good opportunity to do that sort of thing. It's difficult to get ideas on aeroplanes, to be honest with you. You know, you're traveling in a little aluminium tube. It's not very conducive. Although, I don't mind writing on them. I mean, I wrote several big chunks of the book on aeroplanes, because you sort of sit there and nothing to do for 2 hours.
Några månader före jag pratade med Bruce, så pratade jag med Bruce son Austin, som också är sångare i ett band. Och han berättade att då han var barn, så visste han inte om att farsan var i ett sådär stort band som Iron Maiden. Nu hade han nu sett några guldskivor här och där, men inte visste han att Iron Maiden var så stort. I och med att Bruce lämnade bandet då i ett skede, och så körde han solo ett tag, och så återvände han till Iron Maiden under sent 90-tal. Han berättade att först, i och med Bruce första gigs med Iron Maiden, att han då först insåg att oha, pappas band är ju visst ganska stort. Bruce, han förresten också nämnde det, att han var imponerad över det, att han hade en egen bastu i sitt rum, i sitt hotellrum alltså, som han bodde i Helsingfors i.
When it comes to autobiographies, I've read tons at least of, especially from musicians. Do you have, was there something that you wanted to avoid with these books, you know, some sort of things that you might have read in other autobiographies that you didn't want to be included in yours?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of autobiographies seem to do similar things. Either they were just very, very prone to bigging up the amount of scandal in their life. Mm. So they felt the urge to put in some sort of gratuitous sex or whatever and everything else. You know, it's like, you know, pretty much everybody has sex, right? So everybody is pretty similar in that respect. Mm. So what's so special about you having sex that really the world needs to know about it? Mm. You know, it's kind of dumb. Mm. You know, you should put in things that are different, that might give people a window on a world that they really don't know. So that's why, you know, the world, you know, fencing and singing and performing and my childhood are things that people don't know, because I experienced them. So if I can give people a feeling of what it's like to be in that situation, that's kind of a really positive thing on the book. Obviously, the book, I think, should, an autobiography for me, it wasn't what I wanted not to have in it. It's what I, the other way around, what I wanted it to do. I wanted it to entertain, like a story, like a novel, like beginning, middle, end. I wanted it to educate a little bit. So there's some bits in there that people might go, wow, I didn't know that. That's interesting. Mm. If the whole book's like that, then it's like a, if the whole book's like that, it's kind of boring. It's like a textbook. You don't want that. Mm. But, you know, you want to have it. It's entertaining. It tells a story. It's a little bit informative. Maybe you learn something that you didn't know before. And it's funny. Mm. And all of that is kind of what I've always tried to make my life about. Mm. You know? Mm. Look, this is to try and learn something about something every day, and to try and have other people have that enthusiasm and try and pass it on, to try and infect people with a curiosity about life. And to have fun, you know? Mm.
Do you have any own favorites when it comes to autobiographies?
Well, as I say, as I mentioned in the book, I didn't really read a lot of autobiographies. Mm. So I thought back to a couple that I read when I was a student that I quite enjoyed. And one of them was by the actor David Niven, and it's called The Moon's a Balloon. And it was a real classic, and it was a collection of stories that were funny and uplifting and illuminating on Hollywood with, you know, because the guy hung out with Errol Flynn and all these great stories. But it was not a nasty book. It wasn't vulgar and it wasn't cheap and nasty. And so many autobiographies are. They're just, you know, point scoring against, you know, this person did that and then, and I, so I want to, you know, say how shit they are or something. Oh God, it's boring, you know. And a lot of autobiographies are very thin on content because you go there and you say, well, hang on a minute. What exactly has this person done? Answer, if he's a footballer, he can kick a football. Okay, and what else? Okay, well, there's chapter one, or chapter two, or maybe chapter three, but really, that's it, you know? So in order to write an entertaining autobiography, I think you need more. You need more than just what you do. That's my opinion. I mean, I know there are people who would sort of, there are probably plenty of people who would have been happy if the entire book was every single Iron Maiden gig I've ever done in my life with the set list and then the list of what I had for breakfast. Personally, if somebody gave me a book like that for Christmas, I think I would beat myself to death with it. You know, it's like this is a waste of trees, you know. You know, a book should be something which is an entertaining organism. It's a living thing, you know. So, The Moon's a Balloon. And the other one was an old a jazz singer in the UK who is a very eccentric guy and a broadcaster and a guy called George Melly. And he wrote a book called Rum, Bum and Concertina, which was about his life in the 60s. As a jazz singer in a jazz band, going up and down the country and you know taking drugs in the 60s, right? So and it's absolutely beautifully written. It's very very funny, and those two books together, I thought, you know, if I could achieve anything even close to the feeling that I got when I read those books, and trying to give the similar sort of feeling. Which was, it was funny, it was uplifting, sometimes it was sad, but overwhelmingly it was like, isn't life great?
Det som Bruce Dickinson är lite allergisk för i självbiografi är det såna här sex-stories. För alla har sex, så varför skulle just ditt sexliv vara värt att skriva om? Bruce är inte värst sådär intresserad av självbiografier överlag. Det finns några få som man tycker om, till exempel David Nivens bok, alltså skådespelaren David Niven. Om Bruce till exempel skulle få en bok var som det är någon rockstjärna som skriver om sina spelningar och vad den har ätit, så skulle Bruce antagligen slå ihjäl sig med den boken. Så det här är tråkig info för Bruce.